with last year's most played rock single. Here's Brother Kane with Got No Shame.
Dear.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, it's time for the third week of No Shamber. And for this week, I am joined by the Podfather himself. We've been meaning to do a No Shame episode for a long time. So finally, on Rock and or Roll, it's Mr. Ken Mills. Hey, Ken.
Hello, BJ. It is an honor to be here. What a great show.
Thanks. It's an honor to have you. I guess you've been on the show before, sort of, like we did that crossover podcast episode. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And then you interviewed me on the 100th episode. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So
I am a big Rock and or Roll booster. Seriously, I'm very proud of what you've built here. This is fantastic.
I guess we should say, I'm sure most of the people listening are aware, but you have a podcast empire, including the podcast and Cheap Talk, and Zilch, a Monkeys podcast, and Pop, a Pop Culture podcast, and probably a couple more coming soon, right?
Oh, yeah, there's How to Brush Your Teeth, the Ken Way, the Ken Cast, you know.
Yeah, the Ken Cast.
And that's actually about the time that I broke something and they had to cast it. It's a mini-series. But no, I love podcasting. I think it's a great way for people to connect, and it is modern radio for all intents and purposes.
It's way better than radio, that's for sure.
At this point,
in my opinion, yeah.
So, no shame, huh?
Shame. Shame. Shame.
Well, as you know, we each have picked 10 embarrassing, at least to some people or in some version of reality, embarrassing songs to like, and we're just going to count them down and take turns. So do you want to kick things off with your first No Shame track on your list?
Well, BJ, I'm going to kick off my No Shame episode. And really, I have zero shame over anything that I really like.
Shame. Shame. Shame.
I remember you used to, you know, kind of frame this as if someone were to look at your iPod and go, you like that?
Yeah, right.
So I'm going to go back to the days of my teenage years, back to the days of the dreaded disco, back when disco was the enemy. And you know, I was a Kiss fan. I was an Alice Cooper fan. I was a Black Sabbath fan. There's no way that I could like disco. It was the enemy. Those were the cool guys that were on the football team that liked disco. And we were the guys in the art room. And we had to hate disco. Like, no matter how great the Bee Gees were, they were on the other side, right? So, but this one song I always thought was so infectious and goofy. And, you know, we all like to boogie on the disco floor, yeah. I'm going to pick I Love the Nightlife by Alicia Bridges. What do you think of that one, BJ?
I don't like it.
Why?
Yeah, I don't care. I'm not like a big, I don't have like an anti-disco attitude or anything, but there aren't many songs from the disco era that I do like. I don't really know why. It all comes, usually just comes down to the melody for me. But yeah, that song, that's the kind of thing, like, I've been so familiar with it my entire life as being used in comedy bits and, you know, who knows what, commercials. It's just like one of those things, almost like Muzak. It's almost like a Muzak song, you know, because it's just such a familiar background music type thing, I guess.
Well, the vocal performance in this is kind of weird, too, because she does this thing where it sounds like she's singing out the side of her mouth. Hello, my honey. Hello, my baby. Hello, my ragtime gal. That kind of thing. Like, I love the nightlife. I've got the boogie on the disco floor. Yeah.
Was she Jay Frog? Was that his name?
Yeah. So, you know, just imagine the top hat and cane kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a very like schmaltzy type
or something. I don't think she ever really followed it up, at least in the States, with anything all that big. But it was a cool 45. I remember I inherited the 45 at one point. I'm not sure where it came from, how it wound up at my house. And it would be the kind of thing that every time I would move somewhere, this 45 would just bounce across the floor. Like, what the heck? Where'd that come from? But it's something that I really enjoy. It takes me back to the innocence of, you know, those times, the fun, you know?
Yeah.
And it turns out I like a lot more disco than I ever thought that I would, because at the time, it was us versus them. But now, it's all music, right?
Yeah. That's definitely one of those songs that has the odd distinction of everyone knows the song and no one knows who sang it.
Yeah.
You know, there's those songs like that where it's, yeah. So the first song on my list, this song, I heard it at the end of some podcast, and it's just like this perverted guy talking over like 70s porn music with some wacky sound effects. It's a song called Elephants Fucking by this guy Ken Mills.
There are a lot of pictures that someone took the time to upload of elephants fucking. Elephants fucking. Elephants fucking. Elephants fucking.
I'm really ashamed to like it because it's really creepy and pervy, but for some reason I really enjoy this track, Elephants Fucking by Ken Mills. It's pretty great.
That is an excellent song. That should be in everyone's top 10. Should we tell the folks where that came from?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. My job in real life is I'm a graphic designer, and I was working on designing some calendars, and we're part of a subscription photo house kind of thing where you can use images for, like, let's say you're doing a elephant calendar or national monument butterfly calendars, for example, you know, things like that, or I love kittens. I was looking for photos of elephants for an elephant calendar, and you and I were recording one of the Cheap Talk episodes, and I'm looking through this photo house at all these pictures of elephants, and there were like four pictures of elephants fucking that just like came out of nowhere, right? Like, here's elephants walking across the veldt or something like that, and then this all of a sudden out of nowhere. And it just seemed like, man, there should have been some sort of warning. Elephants fucking. So.
Yeah, Dean Falcone was on with us too.
Yeah.
And I remember we were in the middle of a conversation, and all of a sudden you were like, do you guys have any idea how many pictures there are on the internet of elephants fucking? And then I ended up using that as a blooper at the end of that episode. And then later on, I turned it into this excellent song.
Yes. It's a beloved holiday classic.
Elephants fucking. Elephants fucking. Elephants fucking.
It's definitely earned us a explicit tag.
Yeah, an explicit tag on iTunes.
Yeah.
So I guess number 9 now?
Yeah.
Okay, this next track is in the 80s. Music got really strange and weird and cool in some ways. You had all the different genres exploding, and you had everything from Prince and the Gap Band and all that stuff going on over here, and then you had the British New Wave movement. But the problem with the British New Wave movement was everything was classified as New Wave, right? You didn't know if it was good or bad or whatever. Everything from Spandau Ballet is true to some punk band got put under the same label, right? And it's kind of bizarre when you think about it.
Yeah.
Well, this next song was, if I remember correctly, it was the guy who helped discover Boy George, and he basically wanted to replicate that formula. And he started a band called Hazy Fantasy. And they have this song called Shiny Shiny. And this song, whenever it is played by anybody I've ever lived with or hung out with, it's an instant, could you please turn that hideous shit off? And the whole album is very bizarre. This is very indicative of the rest of the album, but this is the best track on the album. They had another attempt to follow up this hit, something about John Wayne is big leggy, I think was the song. Very strange stuff. So it's all of the stuff that you got from the makers of Boy George without the talent.
Okay, my next track is it's written by Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil, I think. I guess Barry Mann released a version of this song in 1980.
Look at this face. I know the years are showing. Look at this life. I still don't know where it's going. I don't know much, but I know I love you. That might be all I need to know.
And then Bill Medley and Bette Midler both released it in 81 and 83.
Space. I know the years are showing. Look at this life. I still don't know where it's going. I don't know much, but I know I love you.
And that may be.
It wasn't a hit until Linda Ronstadt and Aaron Neville released it in 1989 as a duet. It's called Don't Know Much, which is a very cheesy, sappy duet, but I've always liked it. So do you remember that song?
Oh, absolutely. I actually like that song a lot, even though Aaron Neville's performance is just over the top and ridiculous.
But I know I love you.
Yeah, that's the performance that became mimicked,
yeah,
like by Horatio Sanz and everybody. Whatever anybody was doing, Aaron Neville, they were doing it from Don't Much, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's really not indicative of everything he's done either. You know what I'm saying? That affectation. But, you know, it's like what we were saying earlier about the, like, for example, the Bee Gees. That's their whole catalog, right? Is. So up next, my number 8, and you know, I celebrate this band's entire catalog, BJ. I'm a sucker for good boy band music. And I'm you know, the Masters, the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, they are like the Beatles of boy bands, right?
I don't know, the New Kids are probably the Beatles.
Well, yeah, but they're not as good, let's be honest. Those guys couldn't sing. I mean,
the new edition were the Chuck Berry.
There you go. But seriously, boy bands go back to the 60s with everything from whether you want to consider the Monkees or the Beatles part of the boy band thing, or if you look at the Four Tops, the Temptations and stuff like that. It's pretty much the same thing. And boy bands really became a thing when you look at the Osmonds and Jackson 5, right? So that's kind of where it all, when they said we could get younger people and aim them directly at the teenagers. So that's when the marketing angle of that happened. But this song from NSYNC is one that has annoyed people. Like I said, a lot of these songs that are on my list are ones that I've been in cars with people and I'm playing a mix I've made and it comes up and someone says, would you please turn that off? So for your listening enjoyment, I submit NSYNC's Pop, and I have no shame about it.
Yeah, I don't like that song.
Man, I'm tired of singing.
Okay, well, my next song, I don't know if this is how shameful this one is. Like I said last week and the week before, I'm kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel trying to come up with more and more of these lists. But this song, I think it's great. I think I was originally exposed to it when the Afghan Whigs did like a real weird, mellow cover version of it. It's an old Motown song written by Holland, Dozier Holland, and recorded by Freda Payne. It's called Band of Gold.
Mm.
It was a big hit in 1970, and I love this song. I think it's awesome.
I love this song. It's a great song.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's probably that doesn't even probably doesn't quite qualify for No Shame, but
yeah, but it's the kind of thing that if a friend of yours that loves AC/DC might give you the stink eye, like, what the hell?
Yeah, that's true.
And it's a very simplistic song, and a lot of songs get lost in their simplicity. You know, people can't handle something unless it's complicated. Well, my number seven, No Shame, is the Rembrandts, the theme from Friends. What do you think of this one, BJ?
I like it. It's one of those things that it's almost impossible not to be sick of it.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah.
And I really think that that's really what it comes down to, because this is really a bastard child of Day Tripper and Paperback Writer, right? Which, like, Last Train to Clarksville came from, and so on and so forth. You just go down the line, and then eventually we wind up with the Rembrandts theme from Friends. Had you not heard it eight times a day on TBS while you were sleeping, you know, it may be something that you actually enjoy, but it just, whether you binge watch it on Netflix or whatever, however you choose to celebrate Friends, or if not at all, it's one of those things that's kind of an annoying earworm to many people. But I love it. It's got great energy, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, those two guys in the Rembrandts, Danny Wilde, and I just pulled up my record because for some reason my brain is not pulling up. Phil Solemn, yeah, those two guys, Danny Wilde and Phil Solemn, that are the Rembrandts, they had one of my favorite power pop bands, Great Buildings, which they had kind of a hit with what's called Hold On to Something. That was like a minor hit, but they had one album, and it's one of my favorite power pop albums ever, Great Buildings. So played them a couple of times on the podcast, and both of the guys from the Rembrandts were in that band. And then, yeah, I mean, I like other Rembrandt songs too. They weren't as good as Great Buildings, but it's definitely just like a simple power pop song, the Friends theme.
To me, I'll Be There for You it really is a great, fun, perfect track. If you can forgive it being the theme song to a TV show. But, you know, this weekend I was doing some traveling, and I was listening to Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys, and the Sun-Kissed part just kept popping into my head. Remember when that was a Sun-Kissed commercial back in the early 70s? And it just, man, that was the smartest thing that people ever did as far as marketing, because this is, every time you hear this, you know exactly what it is and what it's about, and it's just, it gets stuck in your head, you know. That, and as far as the Sun-Kissed thing, that product's always there, ever present. So number seven on your list, BJ.
Yeah, my next song, I didn't even know until I did a little research that this was written as a Christmas song in 1987, and it was a top five hit in Sweden, but it wasn't released, it was a number one hit in 1990 when it was released here, and they rewrote it so that it wasn't a Christmas song, and it was on the Pretty Woman soundtrack. It's called It Must Have Been Love by Roxette, and that song actually originated as a Christmas song. Which is pretty interesting. I had no idea. So
that's actually a good song. What is there a Christmas lyrics version of it?
Yeah, I guess that was released not in America, but it was, you know, they were from Sweden and it was a hit there.
So
and they changed some of the lyrics. No, I think it is in English.
Oh, okay.
I haven't gotten listened to it. Maybe I'll play it on the show.
Thank you.
But it was they just changed some of the lyrics, I guess, to put it on the Pretty Woman soundtrack. I guess they were looking for a song from them for the soundtrack, and they were like, well, we have this song that hasn't been released over there. So I guess that's how that happened. Then it ended up being number one hit single.
Yeah.
That was like their third number one hit, so they had already been pretty big here by the time. Yeah. But funny thing about them is my sophomore year in college, my roommate – well, actually, so what happened was my – first semester I had a roommate named Dave, and he got kicked out of the dorm for setting the carpeting in the hallway on fire. So then he was replaced.
Does that guy know how to party or what?
Yeah, luckily I was out of town that weekend, even though I mean I don't think I would have been a part of whatever they were up to, but I think I had gone home for the weekend when that happened. So he was replaced. The second semester I had a different roommate, and it was this guy named M. Gregory Ratliff. He always went by Greg, but I remember I saw his mail and it said M. period Gregory. I forget what his first name was, but he must not have liked his first name, so he went by his middle name. But anyways, long story short, Roxette were his favorite band. This was in, what, 93? And they were his favorite band. He had all their CDs, and I thought that was pretty hilarious at the time.
Seriously, you know, like every once in a while you meet somebody like that their favorite band is like this weird favorite band to have.
Yeah.
But that's the ultimate definition of no shame, right?
Yeah. I remember by the end of a few months of roommate being my roommate, he had bought Tusk by Fleetwood Mac, and he bought a Superchunk CD, which I thought was hilarious. So he kept hearing the stuff that I was playing, I guess, and then becoming a fan of some other things other than Roxette. But yeah. He was one of those people. He had like 10 CDs, I think, and five of them were Roxette.
Wow. Well, I know you'd make fun of a lot of the music that I have. I know you would.
No, well, I mean, I have. At this point, I have so much different stuff. But I was just thinking, you know, if M. Gregory Ratliff could hear me talking about how I like a Roxette song, he'd be pretty pissed. Because I'm sure I made fun of him quite a bit at the time. So
he might be overlooking a canyon with a tear going down his cheek because he's still holding the torch for them.
He had complete male pattern baldness when he was like, we were like 19 or 20, and he was already completely bald on top.
Jesus Christ, BJ, what's that all about?
And his favorite band were Roxette. So.
And he suffered from erectile dysfunction. When does it stop with you? When do you quit bullying someone, BJ? Good God, man. I'd like to go on record that I've never said anything bad about M. What is it, Gradford?
M.
Is it?
Gregory Ratliff.
I've never said anything bad about M. Gregory Radcliffe or whatever. I barely pronounce his name.
I have no idea what happened to
him. Wow.
I haven't talked to him. I after we – the next year – and then the year after that, I moved into an apartment with Dave, the guy that got kicked out of the door for setting the carpeting
on fire. Good God.
And then I remember I went to a Dungeons and Dragons game with M. Gregory Ratliff and his friends, and they never invited me back because they didn't like how I played Dungeons and Dragons because I would just, whatever they're, there'd be like a monster in a cave and they'd be trying to decide what to do. And I'd be like, I'll go fight it. And then I would go fight it and get killed or whatever. And I was kind of like, have you seen that Leroy Jenkins video?
Leroy Jenkins!
Yeah, that's basically what I did to their Dungeons & Dragons game, was that Leroy Jenkins did. So they didn't invite me back.
I think it's a pretty good plan. We should be able to pull it off this time. What do you think, Abdul? Can you give me a number crunch real quick?
Yeah, give me a sec. I'm coming up with 32.33, repeating, of course, percentage of survival.
Oh, that's a lot better than we usually do.
All right, chums,
ready, guys?
Let's do this. Leroy Jenkins!
Oh my god, he just ran in. Save him!
Oh jeez, stick to the plan!
Oh jeez,
go.
Let's go. Stick to the plan, chums!
Stick to the plan!
Oh gee, oh fuck.
Give me divine intervention!
Hurry up!
Shout out! Insane, I can't cast! I can't move, am I lagging, guys?
I can't move! What the hell?
I can't aim.
Oh my god.
The eggs keep spawning.
More spawning. I don't think you can cast with that shit.
Oh my god.
Shaq,
I got it.
Oh my god.
God damn it, Leroy.
Alright, what's your next song?
If my dog barks, I'll stop because I have to kill
him. I don't mind having a barking dog. It sounds like Jane's Addiction. Been caught stealing.
I've been caught stealing. Once when I was 5.
That was hilarious. It was barking when you were singing that.
It's beautiful.
I enjoy stealing. Just simple as that.
Want something, man, I don't want to pay for it.
Hold on a second. Fucking idiot dog.
Right when you said that, I'm going to put in a sound effect of like a dog. Like, ah! Like you,
like, don't you dare. So my next track, BJ, is at number 6. It's Britney Spears with Hit Me Baby One More Time. I love this song. And we were all crushing on Britney back then. But I love this song, but I do have some problems with it now, like more than ever, because it's like, what message are you sending people, right?
Yeah, what does she mean by hit me? Which version of hit does she mean?
Yeah, what's going on? It's like, hit me up, you know, call
me. Well,
you
know what
baby.
It is? It's Max Martin, you know, was Swedish, who yep. wrote that song. And I think it's English as a second language. Is what it is more than anything with the lyrics of that. He was probably talking about, you know, hit me like James Brown hit me, you know, I think. But how does it come across? I don't know.
So I always love this song. I'd not, like, again, like I said, I don't know what message it's trying to send, but it's just a great pop song. When I was DJing back at a bar back in the day, I would take this and Backstreet Boys Larger Than Life and mix them together.
Right.
Which may sound like the stupidest thing ever, but it got the girls on the dance floor, and that was the important thing.
Well, I think this was the first Max Martin song that was like a hit, mm-hmm. and it was definitely very different sounding at the time. I mean, you know, of course, Max Martin has gone on to write just a billion hit songs.
Yeah.
Including most of the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC songs, I think. So, yeah, it was different at the time. I mean, obviously, like we've talked about on No Shame, I didn't like it at the time.
Right.
But then you come around at some point. If a song is good, eventually you admit it. I don't know.
Of pieces of shit.
What's my next song?
Yeah.
Well, this next song, I know it from hearing it at work and hearing it in like the grocery store. It's from 2009, so it's a pretty recent song in terms of what's usually on my list. Do you know the song? It goes, everybody, everybody wants to love. Everybody, everybody wants to be loved. Oh, oh, oh. Do you know that song? Have you heard that?
Yes, but your version is so much better. That's the one I want.
Ingrid Michaelson is her name.
Yeah.
She's got a few other hits, I think, but none of them really, I don't really like that much. But I like this song. It definitely hooked me after hearing it enough times, probably. But So, yeah, I don't think it was a huge hit, but it's one of those. What I pick up on, the music that you hear when you go to the grocery store is not huge hits. It's usually like minor hits or songs by people who had hits, but these are the lesser hits, and that's because it's cheap. They get cheap music.
Well, true story, are you ready for this? Lot of times you'll hear things like if you call up Amazon for technical support or customer service, you'll hear songs that Amazon has a deal with someone to play their songs, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They even go like, you are now listening to something by somebody, and which is not the actual artist and song, but, you know, you get the idea.
I also feel like the same shit's going on with The Voice, where the songs they perform on The Voice are, there's a promotional end, and you know, money is changing hands, or people are, you know, cutting deals, and they're getting promotion out of it, you know.
Same with Dancing with the Stars, same exact thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was watching a commercial this weekend. It's one of the rare times that I actually watched commercial television recently, and it came on with a commercial for... Now that's what I call music, 36. And I'm like, 36?
Yeah.
How many years has this thing been going on, right? And then I swear
36
they said,
years, I guess, right?
No, because they come out like 4 years.
Oh, they don't have 1 year?
So
okay.
No.
Okay.
But it's been forever, right? So,
yeah.
But I swear at one point I heard the announcer go, now that's what I call music number 36. Not one song will Ken Mills know.
I swear that
was in the commercial.
Right. Right.
I swear to God. Hand to God, hair to heaven, right?
Usually the only way I know of something new now is I either see them on Saturday Night Live, or sometimes Howard Stern will play the top five songs and make fun of them, and that's usually the only way I know of something new.
Well, my next pick, and speaking of pieces of shit, and I know it is, you know what I'm saying, but when I was DJing at the bar, again, this is another one of those things, this is one of the reasons a lot of things either almost made the cut for this list or are in it, was because you get, you know, girls coming up and requesting a song, and, you know, there are people who want to hear Back in Black or Shook Me All Night Long or Enter Sandman. There's that crowd, and then there's the old-time rock and roll crowd of people, right? And then you get the girls that just want to come and dance. And this was one of their favorite songs, and it's a song that I hated at the time, but now when I hear it, I actually enjoy it. And God help me, I don't know what happened. But Macarena.
That's horrible. That is so horrible.
The song makes zero sense to me. The lyrics are horrible, but there's just something about the energy of it. I don't know. Maybe it's watching pretty girls dance while, you know, I was playing the music under some cool lights and stuff like that. I don't know. But it's almost like it was part of the soundtrack of that year. You know what I'm saying? So, for good or for bad, hey, Macarena, right?
It's fucking horrible. I remember I was at, I think it was one of my cousin's weddings when that song was new, and the DJ, his name, I think, was Dr. Rock. And he played that song like five times, and it was, oh my God, it was driving me nuts.
Wait, in a row?
No, like interspersed throughout the whole like reception, you know? Because it was probably right when that song was like at its biggest, I think. Yeah. Whatever year that was. But I remember I went up to the guy and I was like, hey, could you play like The Cars or Blondie? I was just trying to think of something he might have. And he's like, yeah, sure, man. And then he never played it. Just kept playing the Macarena over and over, that fucker. Fucking Dr. Rock.
Dr. Rock.
I remember he had like a porn stash too. And glasses. he was
obviously an assumed name.
Yeah, it's probably a registered sex offender, that's my guess. Se llama de apellido Vitorino. En la jura de bandera del muchacho. Se la dio con dos amigos. Dun tuk 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 tuk. All right, it's my turn. My next yep. song, I didn't remember that these guys were Australian. They're a pop duo formed in 1993. This song was a number one hit in 98, and I guess it was a reworking of a different song they had called Magical Kisses. Hmm. None of these details anyone cares about because it's called Truly Madly Deeply by Savage Garden, which I remember my sister was really into this song, and then... my sister would always think it was hilarious if there was a pop song she liked that I would admit to liking. Mm-hmm. So this was one of those songs, if I remember right. Because it's just like, sounds like an 80s song more than, you know, it was a 90s hit that sounded like the 80s. Like Savage Garden were clearly going for that 80s vibe, that's for sure.
Right. But see, what you don't realize, and what a lot of people don't realize, we look at decades as from 60 to 70, 70 to 80, right? And that's not how it works. Like, if you look at the 50s and the 60s, there was, like, rock and roll kicked off. And it was pretty much that Chuck Berry-type standard riff, right? And then that's really what the Beatles were built on. And then it wasn't until Revolver and Rubber Soul that things really changed up again, right? So let's say 65 to 75 is, like, the influence of the Beatles and Zeppelin and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? That more guitar rock kind of thing.
Yeah, and then new wave and punk goes from like 77 to 85. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
So when you say that like Savage Garden's Truly Madly Deeply fits more in the 80s than the 90s, it's because we were still recovering from the 80s or trying to figure out what the 90s were to become. And I still don't know what the hell it was.
They were definitely modeling themselves after like Spandau Ballet or the Thompson Twins or whatever. That's what they were, you know, up to, I think.
Well, they're not much different than Roxette. As a matter of fact, I'll be honest with you, I used to confuse them. Next one is one that I think we both love, and it's one of those ones that like the lyrics are just hilarious at some point. She says some things that aren't necessarily true, but that one annoying part where everything explodes, it's like rain on your wedding day. That part, I just love to just sing that part. It empowers every human that sings it. It's Alanis Morissette with Ironic.
Why would you say we both like that?
I think you love it down.
Oh my god,
inside.
I hate that album so much. What's funny is last week me and Wally both picked a earlier Alanis song from before that, when she was like Tiffany. You know, she had two albums before that album, and we both picked songs from one of her first two albums because it was like more of a Canadian themed episode.
Well, let me ask you a question. Did Weird Al ever record, well, isn't it moronic? Don't you think?
He should have.
It's like that song from Alanis Morissette where she gets the definition of the word ironic wrong.
Yeah, but it actually works. It works out brilliantly because it's ironic that nothing in the song is ironic. And so that's what's ironic about the song.
So play it safe. He was afraid to fly. He packed his suitcase. Kissed his kids goodbye. He waited his whole damn life to take that flight. And as a plane crashed down, he thought,
now I'll never make it to that fear of flying seminar.
Isn't it ironic? Don't you think? It's like rain, flooding an umbrella, factory red. It's a free ride to an overpriced car dealership. It's the good advice from the guy who just got you fired. And who would have thought it bigger?
Traffic jam when you're already late. Receive an award for reducing automobile congestion.
And now smoking sign on your cigarette.
With R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company,
it's like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife.
Grab a soup kitchen. It's meeting the man of my dreams. And then meeting his beautiful wife. He's also my relationship therapist.
And isn't it ironic? Don't you think? A little too ironic. Yeah, I really do think.
Yeah, obviously there was a feeble grasp of the concept of irony when those lyrics were scribbled out. I remember seeing an interview with her back then where she bragged about how they were just like writing the songs in 5 minutes in the studio before they recorded them. So, you know, I don't think a whole lot of thought went into writing those lyrics. It was just like they were probably written and recorded within the same 1 or 2 hour period or something.
Well, let's be honest. That whole album was built around the one song, right? They knew they had something with that one song. I want you to know.
Well, I just think it's some of the worst shit ever, that album. I always say she's yodeling with a Scottish accent, and I can't figure out why, but that's like her singing style.
I love cute Canadian girls, so I give her a pass. So, BJ, what's number 4 on your shit-tacular No Shame list?
My next song is a total ripoff of the Notorious B.I.G. song Mo' Money, Mo' Problems, mm-hmm. and it's by Diana Ross. It's called I'm Coming Out. She totally ripped off Notorious B.I.G. on this song.
Yeah, she totally ripped them off. That's messed up.
It's written by Bernard Edwards and Nile Rodgers from Chic, and came out in August of 1980. And would you think of this as a disco song? I don't know. I guess it's got disco elements, but it's more just a pop song.
Well, it's that Nile Rodgers, you know, Chic production. And that's what makes it great, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a great song, isn't it? I love it. So I don't know how No Shamey it is.
I think it's fairly No Shamey like people that listen to Sweet or Mott the Hoople or whatever, and then it's like, what?
It's great though. It's catchy as hell, and it's an interesting, like, cool song. The way it's put together, and it's great. It's great songwriting, great production, all of that. So, and Diana Ross sings it awesome too. So
yeah, and it's horrible to think that she ripped off the great Biggie and all that.
Yeah, is that when I was going to look it up, but I didn't. Is that when she was dating Gene in 1980? Would that have been the same time?
Actually, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so when this came out, Gene Simmons was her boyfriend?
Slam piece, I think, is what you call it. I'm not sure. He got her a really good record deal. Did you ever hear that story?
I don't know.
I actually have the Diana Ross book, and she talks about how she owes Gene Simmons a great amount of gratitude because they were going to give her like some crappy deal. And he's like, what are you talking about? Actually, it was more like this. He's like, what are you talking about? You are the Diana Ross. Why would you settle for less? You know, no. You go back and you tell them you need another million, you know. So he kept stalling the deals and he would advise her and she got this really sweet deal. So
I guess this was kind of a comeback album for her, right? Yeah. This is the same album with Upside Down on it.
Mm-hmm. She was going to leave Motown and they were ready to let her go. But once Gene got an offer from another label, he basically said, now tell them you got an offer from these guys. And yeah. So it upped it back up and they treated her with a lot more respect than they were going to. So. My number three pick. You ready?
Yeah.
Sometimes there's food that you eat that you know is bad, right? Like, for example, if you go to a nice restaurant and you eat too much or you eat the wrong thing, you know it, but it was supposed to be good food. Then there's those times when you go, you know, it's been a while since I've had Kentucky Fried Chicken or Taco Bell. And you go and get it, and then it basically means you've got a X-lax attack coming over the next 3 hours. You only rent food from Taco Bell and KFC, right? And every time you go, man, some KFC sounds good right about now. 3 hours later, I will never do that again. Well, that's this next song. It's from his work on Scooby-Doo from Shaggy. It Wasn't Me.
I agree with equating that song with diarrhea.
Yes, I do too.
Did you hear the Sonny Pooney Stephen Michael episode?
Yes, but I had to mention it because this is a song that I know is bad for me, right? It's like the old friends don't let friends drive drunk. Well, even when I go to hit the play button, I like go, are you sure you want to do this, Ken? So this is one that I actually question myself. I'm always the eternal struggle is real, right? It's happening.
Okay. Off you go.
No.
Yo, man, wake up, man.
What? What's up?
My dad just caught me. Last night it happened. I don't know.
Well, with who?
The guy next door, you know. And honey came in and she caught me red-handed. Green with the guy next door. How could I forget that I had given her an extra key?
Did it there? Now, this bit is somebody talking for me. I just shake it, but I can't do this.
But she got me on the cancer. Wasn't me. She got me cancer on the sofa. Wasn't me. And had her in the shower. Wasn't me. She caught me on camera. Wasn't me.
We've had enough of the singing.
All right, my next song, it was written by Jim Steinman, and he offered it to Meatloaf, but Meatloaf didn't want to use it. Oh, Meatloaf's record company refused to pay Steinman for the material for his Midnight at the Lost and Found album. So there were two songs that were offered to Meatloaf. Well, two of the songs that were offered to Meatloaf were Total Eclipse of the Heart, of course, by Bonnie Tyler, and then this song by Air Supply, Making Love Out of Nothing at All, which both of those are great songs. I really love Making Love Out of Nothing at All, and I've seen it made fun of quite a bit, like in popular culture. And of course, Air Supply are kind of synonymous with people thinking of bad music, I think. Just like, you know, they have a real bad reputation. But what's funny is that this song went to number 2 on Billboard, and the song that kept it from the number 1 spot was Total Eclipse of the Heart. So for that week or two or whatever, the top 2 songs in the country were these 2 Jim Steinman songs that Meatloaf's record company wouldn't pay for.
Wow.
So that was a bad move on the record company's part, I think.
Yeah, it seriously was a huge hit.
Yeah, I didn't even realize it was as big as it was. But that's hilarious that Total Eclipse of the Heart and this were the top 2 songs in the country at the same time. It's crazy.
Seriously, some great pop stuff there.
Yeah,
you can not like it for whatever reason, but it's hard to knock the success of it.
I think it's a great song.
I do too. No problems here.
And I'll never let you fall. And I don't know how you do it, making love out of nothing at all. Out of nothing at all. Out of nothing at all.
Number 2, the next track, I'm going to pick one from the 70s. And the thing I loved about the 70s is there was this thing, they would do story songs, right? Everything from songs about truckers and 10-4 and all that. Or you had your novelty songs and everything from Hey Baby, I'm the Telephone Man to They Call Me the Streak or Jaws, things like that. But then there were the songs that told a story. And this is one of those songs. From the great Helen Reddy, a song called Angie Baby.
You live your life in the songs you hear on the rock and roll radio. And when a young girl doesn't have any friends, that's a really nice place to go. Folks hoping you'd turn out cool, but they had to take you out of school. You're a little touch, you know. Angie, baby, lovers appear in your room each night and they whirl you across the floor. But they always seem to fade away when your daddy taps on your door. Angie, girl, are you all right? Tell the radio good night. All alone once more, Angie, baby. Baby, you're a special lady. Live
she's I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar, right?
Right.
Ellen Reddy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I know any other songs by her besides that one. I don't remember, but...
I celebrate her entire catalog, BJ.
I'm not a fan.
So what'd you think of this song?
Yeah, I didn't like it. Very soft rock, like really... Yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't pick up on the fact that this chick has these weird mental powers and somehow traps this boy that mocked her into like some sort of thing where she traps him forever inside of her radio and he lives inside there and she can play him whenever she wants. You didn't pick up on that?
No, I didn't listen that closely to the lyrics, I must admit.
Oh my God, you've got to listen to this.
And as she turns the volume down, he's getting smaller with the sound. It seems to pull him off the ground. Toward the radio he's bound, never to be found.
I remember there were people that hated this song. They said it was, back in the 70s, there were people like, I like it, but it's just really creepy. And it's like, you're damn right it is. It's very bizarre.
Who wrote it? I wonder.
I don't know. Let's find out. Google is our friend.
Isn't there a Kiss connection with Helen Reddy that I'm not thinking of?
She sang on Gene Simmons' 1978 solo.
Right, she's on his solo, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's Canadian. I could have used the Helen Reddy song on
last
week.
No, she's Australian. She's Australian.
Oh, she's. I would think she's Canadian. Okay.
No. You live your life in the songs you hear on the rock and roll radio. When a young girl doesn't have any friends, it's a really nice place to go. Folks hoping that you'd turn out cool, but they had to take you out of school. You're a little touched, you know, Angie baby. Anyway, stopping by our house is a neighbor boy with evil on his mind because he's been peeking through Angie's room at night through the window blind. I see your folks have gone away. Would you like to dance with me today? I'll show you how to have a good time, Angie baby. So when he walks into the room, he feels so confused, like he's walked into a play, and the music's so loud and it spins him around till his soul has lost its way. And as she turns the volume down, he's getting smaller with the sound. It seems to pull him off the ground towards the radio he's bound, never to be found. The headlines read that a boy disappeared and everyone thinks he died, except a crazy girl with a secret lover who keeps her satisfied. It's so nice to be insane, no one asks you to explain. The radio's by your side, Angie baby. It sounds like something Alice Cooper would have sung more
yeah.
than Helen Reddy, you know what I'm saying? A lyrical story song. Alan O'Day, he said it took him 3 months to write the song. It was loosely based on the character in the Beatles' Lady Madonna. In order to make the character more interesting, he decided to make her abnormal, and he thought of a young next-door neighbor girl who had known who had seemed socially retarded. O'Day said he also thought of his own childhood, since as an only child he was often ill. Many of his days were spent in bed with a radio to keep him company. He named the character Angie, inspired by the Rolling Stones song Angie. Originally, the character was portrayed as a mentally slow, but while writing the song, O'Day showed it to his therapist, who pointed out that the character's reactions to the song were not those of a mentally disabled person. So O'Day changed the lyric from slow to touched. And the character's image changed from being mentally disabled to being crazy. This expanded to her living in a dream world of lovers, inspired by the songs on her radio. When a neighbor boy with evil on his mind tries to enter her room to take advantage of the girl, he is instead drawn into her reality with weird and unexpected consequences. That sounds like a movie from the 70s, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The intent was to show that the Angie character had more power than he or the listener expected. She shrank him down into a radio where he remained as her slave whenever she desired him to come out. That's pretty fuckered, right? Wow.
And that was a number one hit, huh?
Yeah. Kind of strange.
I didn't know that song.
Yeah. She had number one hits with that, I Am Woman, and Delta Dawn. So weird, weird, weird. Weird and wild stuff. Hail.
The headlines read that a boy disappeared and everyone thinks he died. Except a crazy girl with a secret lover who keeps her satisfied. It's so nice to be insane. No one asks you to explain. Radio by your side, Angie baby.
So your number two is?
My next song, Elton John and Bernie Taupin were accused of plagiarism by South African photographer and songwriter Guy Hobbs, who in 1982 supposedly wrote a song called Natasha about a Russian waitress on a cruise ship. I guess the lawsuit was thrown out of court. So I'm going to have to go check out Natasha by Guy Hobbs if it's on YouTube or something. But the song I picked is Nikita by Elton John, which I could understand someone not liking this song. But for some reason, I've always liked it, even though I'm not a huge Elton John fan personally. But
it's not one of my favorite Elton John songs.
Yeah, it's probably not one of most people's favorite.
You know, I can deal with it when it's like on a greatest hits thing, right? Like yeah. That kind of a thing. But it was just very interesting when it came out. I remember being interested in it. His look was really weird then too. But that's kind of weird saying that about Elton John, right? I mean, the guy did dress as Daffy Duck for fuck's sake. So it just looked bizarre with the straw hat. Looked like he was trying to be in a musical or something. Very bizarre.
They played it a lot on MTV.
Oh my God, yes. Too much.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people hate it.
Yeah, probably. I think you're right. Seriously. I don't know how good it feels to hold you. Oh, Nikita, I need you so. And you know, it's not often that the people on No Shame get to be tortured by people who make fun of them for their choices directly by the host of this show. But I have been teased by you on more than one occasion for loving this song. And this song is by Henry Gross and the song Shannon. This song is about a dog who dies. And this is the song that the famous Casey Kasem tape is from, right, where he talks about, if I have to come out of an up-tempo song about a goddamn dog dying.
Yeah.
So
now, we're up to our long-distance dedication. And this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in Cincinnati, Ohio, and here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's go start again. I'm coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please.
She knows.
See, when you come out of those up-tempo goddamn numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but goddamn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Is Don on the phone? Okay, I want a goddamn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a fucking up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication. Now, make it, and I also want to know what happened to the pictures I was supposed to see this week. This a god last goddamn time. I want somebody to use his fucking brain to not come out of a goddamn record that is that's up-tempo, and I got to talk about a fucking dog dying.
This is the one that caused the Casey Kasem meltdown.
Boy, this is fucking ponderous, man. Ponderous, fucking ponderous.
Now, here's what the song has done in my life. Every woman I've ever lived with hates this song. Because about 4 or 5 times a year, I will play it, like 6 or 7 times in a row, until I cry. And I don't know why I do it. There's 2 songs that make me consistently cry. And for good reasons. One of them is Shandy by Kiss. There's just something in the lyrics of that song and the melody that just really touched me. But
it's something about female names that begin with Shan.
Oh my God, I never put that together. Holy crap. But this song, I remember when this song came out, it was in the days of riding my bike. I would duct tape a radio to the front of my bike and just ride around and have fun with the gang. And you know, this was the days of baseball cards and having fun, but this song always spoke out to me. And I had a dog named Barney that was this great big monstrous beautiful golden retriever, and she had her back broken at one point, but we nursed her back to health, and we took her in, and she was incredibly loyal. And great dog, protected us, literally stopped one of us from getting hit by a truck, dove in front of us to stop the truck from hitting us. So I was really into that dog, and there's something about that dog passing away and this song, but it's just a beautiful song, and it's absolutely beautiful. And then later I had a dog that I actually named Shannon. She was also a golden retriever. Just the sweetest girl in the world as far as a pet, and she died of cancer. So whether it was the haunting melodies and the beautiful music, but the song's about a dog that goes swimming, gets dragged out by the tide. It's just a song that I cannot walk away from. I love it so much, but you've actually given me crap about it on the podcast.
Well, I remember you telling, I remember you talking about it before. I think Gary was giving you crap about it more than me, if I remember right. Or maybe Matt Porter. I don't remember.
Just heartless individuals all when it comes to this thing. But that's my number one pick because it upsets any woman. It's like, why do you do that to yourself? Why would you play that song until you cry? And I'm like, wait a second. You guys watch chick flicks to make yourself cry. But, you know, you should. I'm in touch with my feelings here, you know.
Is that the same clip where Casey Kasem at the end, he's like, and also, where are those pictures you're supposed to send me?
Can we make a goddamn concerted effort to come out of a fucking up-tempo number when we're doing a goddamn death dedication? And another thing, is Don there? Where are those pictures that he was supposed to get them to me a week ago or something like that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand what Casey was talking about. It's like he didn't know what he was reading, so he's reading it in like a happy voice.
Happy voice, like,
and it turns out it's about a dog dying. And so that, I understand.
Like, just imagine it like this: moving up the charts, it's Disco Inferno. And now to a long-distance dedication.
Yeah.
Our dog Snuggles. God damn it.
But really, all he's complaining about is that he had to read a couple of sentences for a second time. You know, that's really his complaint, is that he wants to only have to do it once, and he doesn't want to have to read it twice.
Yeah. I think,
is what he's so mad about. But
well,
yeah.
Oh, fuck. What the hell's going on here? Oh, geez, well, isn't it the last hour? We got another hour to do? Geez, I thought we were almost finished. Good golly, Miss Molly.
So what is your number one pick? Moving up to number one.
Boy, this is fucking ponderous, man. Ponderous, fucking ponderous.
Well, in no particular order, but my last song is long before Katy Perry came out with a song called I Kissed a Girl. Mm-hmm. In 1995, Jules Sobule came out with a song called I Kissed a Girl.
Yes, she
and
did.
It's a much, much better song than Katy Perry's song. So that's my pick. I Kissed a Girl by Jules Sobule.
I kissed a girl. Called home to say she'd be late. He said he worried, but now he feels safe. I'm glad you're with your girlfriend. Tell her hi for me. And then I looked at you, you had guilt in your eyes, but it only lasted a little while. And then I felt your hand above my knee. And we laughed at the world. They can have their diamonds. I kissed a girl. I kissed a girl.
I don't know how no shame it is, but I don't know. It seems, I mean, the first thing I thought of when Katy Perry came out is that there was already a song called I Kissed a Girl by a female singer, you know?
Yeah.
So I looked at Wikipedia about this song, and there's a great quote from Jill Sobule about, so I'm just going to read what Jill Sobule had to say in an interview in 2009. The Katy Perry song came out in 2008. So this is her quote. When Katy Perry's song came out, I started getting tons of inquiries about what I thought. Some folks were angry and wondered why she took my title and made it into this kind of girls gone wild thing. As a musician, I've always refrained from criticizing another artist. I was, well, good for her. It did bug me a little bit, however, when she said she came up with the idea for the title in a dream. In truth, she wrote it with a team of professional songwriters and was signed by the very same guy that signed me in 1995. I have not mentioned that in interviews, as I don't want to sound bitter or petty. Okay, maybe if I really think about it, there were a few jealous and pissed off moments. So here goes, for the first time in an interview. Fuck you, Katy Perry, you fucking stupid, maybe not good for the gays, title thieving, haven't heard much else, so not quite sure if you're talented, fucking little slut.
Oh my god. Read that again.
Fuck you, Katy Perry, you fucking stupid, maybe not good for the gays, title thieving, haven't heard much else, so not quite sure if you're talented, fucking little slut.
Good god. Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Next time she'll have to speak her mind a little more clearly.
What's funny is that was before Katy Perry became much bigger after that. Like with her next album with Teenage Dream and stuff, Fireworks, that's when she really got huge. So, this was before Katy Perry even went, like, you know, to the stratosphere, like became one of the biggest, you know, pop people, you know. For how many years now, she's just been like one of the top people. So this, but her first single, I Kissed a Girl, is just more like we were saying, like a novelty song, like all those other songs we were talking about. But I had always thought about the Jill Sobule song, but I had never seen what she thought about it. It's funny that Katy Perry was signed by the same guy that signed her, you know? So.
Wow.
But that song, the Jill Sobule song, was on the radio. It wasn't a big hit, I guess, but I heard it on the radio back then in 95 when it came out. But probably most people in 2008 when Katy Perry came out, most people had no idea that there was already a song, you know, that had the same theme but was much better. So,
well, it was also aimed at youth culture directly.
Yeah.
Which is a big difference. One was meant to shock and titillate. The other one was a much different headspace.
I think Jill Sobule's was more like to make homophobes uncomfortable or something like that. And Katy Perry's was, like she said, Girls Gone Wild. Jill Sobule called it a Girls Gone Wild thing. very different motivation behind it. So I kissed a girl and I like it.
I guess that was, I finally have appeared on a No Shame episode. So here I am.
Yeah, congratulations. You've made it. You know how like people say, I know I made it when Weird Al did my song or whatever?
Yeah.
In podcasting, you know you made it when you did a No Shame episode.
Well, there you go. Sodomizing sheep. Sodomizing sheep. Brian is a cool guy.
I'll be back.